Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1113. Head on over to ID10T.com Sunday, April 4th, which I believe is Easter Sunday, and also the day that the finale of season 10C of Walking Dead, the Here's Negan episode will be airing that night. And on Talking Dead, Jeffrey Dean Morgan will be on, as well as Hillary Burton Morgan, who plays Lucille. But ID10T is launching the official, exclusively the official Walking Dead polo shirt, which is it's a Walker Head polo shirt. So it is a red polo shirt with a Walker Head on the pocket area. And we're taking pre-orders starting Sunday, April 4th. And then they will be shipped out a couple weeks after that. So check in at ID10T.com. Sign up for the email list so you can be notified of the Walker Head polo and when other things come up. And yeah, just a heads up, the day of this posting of the podcast is March 25th, 2021, just in case you want to know. Oh, I don't know, unless this was dug up 1,000 years in the future and you're just listening to this purely for anthropological and historical reasons. This is a podcast. But anyway, if you are in the here and now in 2021, that will be Sunday, April 4th. We're taking pre-orders on The Walking Dead official Walker polo exclusively at ID10T.com. But now let's talk about you, the ID10T community, with the corkboard. Events at ID10T.com, like Chris Dunn, who writes, "We are photographers who've been partners with a company called Archipelago, who develops Lightroom presets for photographers. Presets are helpful editing tools that provide photographers with an efficient workflow and allow them to quickly achieve colors and tones of their aesthetic dreams when editing their images. During the shutdown, we came up with an idea to provide our Lightroom presets, tools, and education to the photography community at a more affordable price option. Typical signature preset package sells at $90 a pack. Right now, with a monthly subscription that provides an exclusive new preset monthly for only $8 a month, they're also providing subscribers with the community to share their work and interact with other photographers around the world, along with monthly educational videos and gear reviews. So if you're a photographer, you're interested in joining their quest for new presets, you can subscribe at archipelagoquest.com. You can cancel at any time. We hope you stick around as we continue to grow a supportive and inspiring community of photographers. Thank you, Chris Dunn, and to anyone else, events at ID10T.com for your thing on the corkboard. This episode is Mr. Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead. Earlier, when I spoke of Walking Dead polo, I said this was relevant to this podcast, and it just so happens to be. Not planned, it just worked out that way, because guess what? Kirkman is barely even here to talk about The Walking Dead, which of course we talk about, but he also has on March 26th on Amazon another comic book, Invincible. Airing, premiering, launching. It's an animated series now with an unbelievable cast. First of all, Steven Yeun, who, when we recorded this a handful of weeks back, had not yet been nominated for an Oscar. Now I can say Oscar-nominated Steven Yeun stars in Invincible. It's so amazing. I'm so excited for Steve. He absolutely deserves it. And so congratulations, Steve, if you still listen to the podcast. I love you. Also in Invincible, J.K. Simmons, Sandra Oh, Gillian Jacobs, Lauren Cohan, Mahershala Ali, John Hamm, Zachary Quinto. I mean, it's an incredible cast and a great comic that has been now realized over at Amazon. So that is congratulations to Robert Kirkman and everyone over at Skybound Image. And there you go. That is available. Well, I guess let's call it now, because this is going up on the 25th, but by the time you hear it, it'll probably be the 26th. So you can watch Invincible on Amazon right now. P.S. You can also watch The Walking Dead. Season 10C is in effect right now. That will then roll into April with Fear the Walking Dead. Then eventually World Beyond comes back. Then eventually First Walking Dead show comes back and Talking Dead. So until then, here's a man whom I adore and, side note, who I owe a pretty sizable chunk of my career to. It's the episode number 1113, Robert Kirkman.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Here we are.
Is that a different room?
This is actually where we've been shooting Talking Dead. Yeah, this is a basement.
I watch Talking Dead. I've seen this room many times. What are you talking about? How dare you? How dare you insinuate?
I didn't realize. Talking Dead is a show that talks about The Walking Dead. Yeah, this is my basement. We sort of converted it into like a log cabin-y thing. So it looks like a log cabin, but it's
cool.
It's in Los Angeles, the not a log cabin-esque city at all. So
looks like a place where you could get comfortably murdered.
What? What is that poster behind you? Is that
Frank Frazetta poster for the 1970s classic The Gauntlet with Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, I saw Clint Eastwood there. I couldn't figure out.
It is the most epic movie poster for a movie that is in no way as epic as the movie poster would imply.
And that was a longtime Clint Eastwood co-star Sandra Locke, who I believe was in.
Briefly wife. The movie's spectacular, but the poster is like 1,000 times better. It's like Clint Eastwood as Conan the Barbarian. and I'm a liberal, but I still love Clint Eastwood. This is okay. He can talk to as many chairs as he wants, but he's still a rad dude in my book.
Is that artwork available anywhere, or is that just something that was done for you?
No. This is the actual, what are they called? It's a six sheet poster. The poster that they would have put in the theaters.
Gotcha.
The actual painting, I believe, is owned by Robert Rodriguez.
Oh my God. Of course. He must have a ton of that stuff.
Yes.
That is some excellent artwork. So I'm looking around to see what else is in your, is that a Transformers poster?
It's Transformers the movie. Yes.
Oh, the original animated movie.
Yes. Yeah, Transformers the movie is the animated one. Anything else is Transformers, is Michael Bay stuff, which is also good. I love the Michael Bay movies.
So
as good as the animated ones.
I want to clear up something because I have a memory in my head but have not been able to find it anywhere online. But I saw the original Transformers movie in the movie theater with a friend of mine when I was in grade school. And I distinctly remember there was swearing in the movie, which blew my mind.
Yeah.
Because there was like, I think when something is, maybe when Unicron shows up or something, you know, Spike goes, oh shit. Like, I remember there was swearing in the movie, but when the VHS DVD came out, that was not in the movie. And it made me, that I
so
remember.
The oh shit that Spike says when he, I don't remember that being in the theatrical version.
Okay.
But it was in the, you could get a Japanese version of the VHS, like back when you would get VHS tapes of things from other countries, from places. The international cut basically had the shit. Ultra Magnus is trying to open the Matrix of Leadership when Galvatron is attacking them on the junk planet, which I used to know the name of, but I'm old now. And he can't open the Matrix because, you know, he ain't worthy. That's for Rodimus Prime to do later on in the movie.
Right.
And he says, damn it, open. And that was in the theatrical version that I recall and in the VHS version, because I just remember that absolutely blowing my mind. Like that fucking Transformer just said, damn it. Like, holy crap. I didn't realize that, just at the time.
Well, there were a lot of things that I didn't realize. Number one, I didn't realize that basically the commercial existed just to be a toy commercial. That was beyond my scope of understanding in the 80s. I watched the shit out of it. I feel like, was the planet Junkion? Like, didn't it just have some sort of a name? Like, it was just sort of like made up Latin words. Like, they just put English words with something that sounds robotic. So like Cybertron and Junkion, and wasn't Eric Idle?
Yeah, I think it was Junkion. But yeah, Eric Idle played Retgar and Dare to Be Stupid in the movie.
Yes! Oh my God, that's right. This movie's fucking great. I swear to God, I was so blown away.
I watched it like 3 days ago, by the way. Like, I watched this movie constantly.
You know what's interesting about your fascination with this movie is that there is some seeds of Walking Dead DNA.
No. Transformers the movie is the basis for my entire career as a writer. my entire writing style, and I'll go even further, the kind of entertainment I prefer to consume.
That
because at a very young age, I talked my parents into taking me to the movie theater to see Transformers the movie because I love the cartoon. And at a very young age, 8 minutes into that movie, the Autobots are flying from the moons of Cybertron to Earth to warn Autobot City that the Decepticons are going to attack. And yep. Megatron's ship intercepts them. Megatron busts through the side of the ship
and fucking starts killing people.
Savagely murders Ironhide and Ratchet. And I want to say somebody else. I know Wheeljack is dead in the city later, but like orange smoke comes out of their mouths and their eyes go black and they fucking die.
That's where I was going. The idea of just killing major characters.
So they have never done that in the cartoon, but like not only is it killing major characters, but it is sitting down for a piece of entertainment that is going to absolutely blow the back of your head out. Like, I talk to people that are like, well, you know, I don't really like to be surprised. And can you give me a little hint of what's coming? Like, I mean, I'm a little anxious. Like, I just want to know. And I'm just like, whoa, it like blows my mind because what I want out of entertainment is I want that sinking feeling of like, I did not expect this. And it is now happening now. And it is taking me to a place that is making me nervous. It is making me scared. It is terrifying me. Just because I'm entering into the unknown, it's what I strive the most hard to provide in everything that I do, and it is the thing I most enjoy. When Nikolai Coster Wallace gets his hand cut off in Game of Thrones, what's his goddamn name in that show?
Waldo. Nikolai Coster Waldo.
What's his name in the show? It's killing me that I can't think of it.
Oh, it's Jaime.
Kingslayer.
Jaime Lannister.
Jaime Lannister. When he gets his hand cut off in that show, like, I felt sick to my stomach. And the way that he gets his hand cut off and then it immediately goes into the music and you're just like, and the episode is over and you have to like wait a week to like get any kind of like acknowledgement of what just happened. And you're like, well, like what? What is going on? Like that is the sweet spot in entertainment for me.
Well, by the way, that is where I want to live. That's a Rick Grimes move, that's a comics Rick Grimes move, by the way.
We did it with Rick Grimes in the comics, with me having not read the Game of Thrones books, but all credit to George R.R. Martin. It happened years before in the Game of Thrones book. So I'm not going to take credit for any kind of shockingly, not that, you know, the guy invented chopping people's hands off. I mean, we've been doing that for years, but what I'm saying is it all goes back to Transformers the movie. Everything comes from Transformers the movie.
I love
Transformers the movie
because Robert Kirkman. No, because it when you think about in the 80s, it's very common now for, you know, for major characters to be killed off in storylines, and I do believe that Walking Dead led the charge in terms of television to let people know, like, well, no character is safe.
Yeah.
And at any point, you know, it used to be like, oh, you know, J.R. Ewing would get shot at the end of a season and that'd be a cliffhanger and you didn't know. Oh, but then he turned out to be okay. The idea of killing major characters is just not something television really liked to do because they really like to double and triple down on things that are working. So they don't want people to go away and walk that sort of through their way. But in the 80s, that was really never done, particularly the philosophy, like, that they sat down and basically took this toy commercial of a television series and said, look, if we're going to make a movie, it's got to be so wildly next level from what the TV show is. There's going to be swearing. Characters are going to die. Characters are going to evolve. Megatron's going to turn into Galvatron, who's fucking Leonard Nimoy. You know, like, I've all mad respect to them for deciding that to make a movie, they were going to up the stakes to such a level. Although,
it was almost done by accident too, because really all they wanted to do was the cartoon, as spectacular as it was, and I still watch it sometimes to this day. Amazing soundtrack, by the way. The music in the Transformers TV show is just absolutely awesome. But it was, you know, to sell toys. Yeah. So when they do the movie is to usher out the previous product line and usher in the new product line.
Okay,
and so they're like, Optimus Prime is dead. All of your toys are dead. All of the toys in your house that you're playing with are now dead characters. You do not want to play with them. You want to play with the new toys. You want Hot Rod. You want Cup. You want Blur. You know, the Dinobots, super popular. We'll keep the Dinobots around. But everybody else, like, those toys are old. You don't want them anymore. You want these new toys. Like, that's literally all that movie was.
Damn it. Okay.
Let's kill your old products and bring in new ones. But, man, yeah. It worked.
God damn it. So you're right. So here I am thinking like a creative type, like, oh, it's so bold that they, and it's like, no.
That was the intent from Hasbro, but then there's a lot of creative people along the way that are like, okay, we're going to do some cool shit within this construct. And they did and did a great job.
Yeah, it really was. And I think Orson Welles' last movie maybe as Unicron, right? Wasn't that his last film?
I think it is. Yeah, it's one of those famous like last movies, like Raul Julia's last movie is Street Fighter II, or it's like, wait a minute, his last movie is Transformers? Like there's a lot of last movies like that.
Still a great thing to be involved with. And also it really the animation was great, and it really, they could have, I understand that they were trying to usher in the new level of the new wave of Transformers now. I just don't know how that escaped me all this time, but they really, really, really did a good job with it. Like, they put more time and effort into it than they necessarily had to at that point, because all of us who watched the series would have gone to see the movie anyway. But they did, the animation was, they really did up the game on the series. Although I don't remember, did a lot of that bleed back into the series after it came out? I know like later on.
Oh, yeah. No, the animated series after the movie completely follows up after the movie and has all the characters from the movie. Seasons 1 and 2 of the television show take place before the movie, and seasons 3 and 4 take place after the movie. And it's all very tight continuity wise.
Got it. Are they still making Transformers cartoons now? Have they done a season?
I mean, there's a Netflix show, but look, I'm here to promote cartoons on Amazon, so I ain't mentioning no Netflix show. but no, there's a pretty cool Transformers cartoon that's on Netflix right now.
On some streaming platform that's not relevant.
It doesn't use Peter Cullen as the voice of Optimus Prime, which I consider a cardinal sin.
Oh yeah, you gotta have him.
So that kind of frustrates me, but
yeah, you got to have him, and you got to have the guy who did Starscream, who also, that was a pretty epic. I mean, there's just tons of spoilers for Transformers, the movie, the cartoon. But at this point, if people haven't seen it in the last 36 years, 35 years, I feel like the spoiler, I feel like that's been lifted at this point.
Yeah.
But that.
Yeah, no, the Starscream death is horrifying.
I remember I had some friends over, and I had taped the movie from cable, and I replayed the Starscream death when Galvatron shows up and turns into this wicked laser cannon. And they were just not as impressed as I was. I thought it was the coolest fucking thing I had ever seen. And it was just yet another example of like why stuff. Well,
he turns black and crumbles into ash. And then Galvatron like stomps on the crown that was on his head, and it's just the absolute like the most brutal shot.
Starscream gets to be the leader of the Decepticons for like 10 seconds.
Yeah. Well, he got his wish. He got his wish. He's been trying to do that since the very beginning of the show, and he did it. Briefly.
Although, where do you stand on this? Because the physical laws of that universe, I always wondered how at that beginning scene when Megatron breaks into the Star Cruiser. And then starts murdering everyone. I remember kind of thinking like, oh, well, so all the other times they got shot, like, I don't understand like the science of how now all of a sudden he's able to murder them. Of course, it's a movie and they were able to
look,
do it.
Chris, there's still some level of fuck you, it's for kids. You have to acknowledge there's always a little bit of fuck you, it's for kids. I mean, you know, like all the other Transformers die. Optimus Prime dies and turns gray. That didn't make any damn sense. Why is that happening? But yeah, there's a lot of inconsistency. I mean, look, if you pay attention to the movie, some of the Insecticons that get turned into the Sweeps and Cyclonus, are actually at the coronation in the background of the Starscream scene. So there's some little things where you're like, you know, it's for kids, like, you know, like whatever. But yeah, it doesn't make it any less spectacular. I mean, one of them is a normal sized transformer and then turns into a goddamn flying train space shuttle. And then they all get inside of him and they leave the planet. And you're like, wait, what? Like, how did that guy turn into a giant shuttle that they all fit into?
They can fit a bunch of other giant robots.
Yeah. And then I know that there's like some mythology where someone at Hasbro was like, well, you know, these Transformers are, they're hollow and there's a lot of space in them. And so that's why Megatron can turn into a little gun and then turn into a full-size Transformer. I just leave it to fuck you. It's for kids. Like, we don't need to have like scientific explanations for why Megatron like shrinks down into a handgun that the other ones can hold. No, I'm your leader. Now hold me and shoot me.
Really economized his transforming.
Yeah, the only way to explain that is, you know, it's for kids. Like, whatever. It's dumb. There's a little aspect of this that is stupid. And that's what makes it special. You should embrace
it. I guess if you're willing to suspend your disbelief that there's a planet of humanoid robots that is basically just like our planet, but just everything is cyber, then you're probably fine with suspending your disbelief about the physics of the Transformers not working. As much as I love Transformers, I was so irritated by GoBots. Did you watch GoBots?
Loved GoBots.
Did you? I just didn't like how rubbery they were. Like that to me, like, felt not they were bendy, and I just felt like, even as a kid, I was like, I was upset by the physics of it because it just felt like, how are they so bendy, this metal, like it doesn't make any sense.
GoBots were I called GoBots the Transformers my parents could afford, so the GoBots cartoon was absolute garbage, but you know what, it's all we could afford in the Kirkman household.
So the GoBots Not to be confused with the Kirkman household, the GoBots were basically the Kirkland brand Transformers.
Yes, they were.
They were like the bag of Honey O's at the bottom of the shelf, as opposed to the Honey Nut Cheerios, which were like two shelves higher. That was the GoBots.
Yes, exactly. They were the ones where the packaging didn't have quite as much effort put into the design.
But it is interesting that as creative types, you know, we think of television and film as artistic, television specifically as an artistic medium, but this is the question of like, when you really kind of peel back the layers, like, wait a minute, television shows were created to distract people so that they'd be focused on a box that would sell them shit.
Yeah, we're all just selling paper towels, baby. Why do you think you do this podcast? You don't hear those ads? You do remember recording those things, right?
Yes.
We're a creamy mattress. It's a mattress made out of whipped cream. You know, everybody should be sleeping on whipped cream today. I slept on whipped cream last night, and I loved it. Creamy mattress. It's the mattress for you. They'll ship it to your house. It'll unbox, and you'll try it for 5 days.
Home
and
on cheer.
If you don't like it, because that's not a ploy. Who's going to have someone come and get a mattress at their house? Yeah, come on.
By the way, these sarcastic ideas tend to be some of the best ideas. I think foamy mattress is a really great idea. Whipped cream mattress, was it?
Yeah, it's a mattress full of whipped cream.
I don't see any problem with that.
It's good for a couple of days, and then it smells real bad.
Do you remember? I don't think this is really a trend anymore, but you must have had this in Kentucky too, because it was very popular in Tennessee where I grew up. The waterbed trend. Did you guys have a waterbed when you were like waterbeds were such a thing, and I've never heard anyone in the last 25 years say like blah 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 waterbed that I own.
So I can talk about waterbeds if you want.
Yeah,
my parents had a waterbed. And as a kid, I remember you know, like from time to time during a little bit of spring cleaning, my mother would have a broom and she would be burping the waterbed, because the waterbed would get air bubbles in it and you would have to take the little cap off and you would run a broom across the waterbed and like push the air toward the open cap to get some of the excess air out of said waterbed. And, you know, like you lay in your parents' bed and you're like, this is the best thing ever. I just love waterbeds. So cool. And so, lo and behold, I think for my 14th or 15th birthday, Robert Kirkman got a fucking waterbed.
Unbelievable. Did you
and
have?
To- I had. Go ahead. Sorry, I'm just stepping on your questions.
No, you're not. I was just asking. Did you also have to burp the bed to get the air out?
Yeah, because it starts to get like it starts to get balloony, and you can feel it like lifting you because there's like an air bubble on top of the water in a contained, you know, bubble. You're a science guy, you know how this works. And so, air, right? It just makes the surface feel weird. But the waterbed is just probably the grossest goddamn thing on the entire fucking planet, because it is a wooden box with a big, you know, plastic bag inside of it that you put like sheets and stuff on, but like dirt and grime. You basically have a gigantic mother of all couch cushions around the perimeter of your bed. So like any dirt and debris or whatever just gets stuck down in there. And so those cracks around the waterbed are just horrific. You know, you find ink pens down there, like all kinds of stuff. And then the edge of the waterbed is a wooden box, which is, you know, hard because it's wood. And so you're like climbing over this like wood frame to get into bed. And so you get shin bruises and things climbing into bed. But they give you these like pads that you put on the bed. But the pads have like this like thin nylon like coating over like some cushiony material. And those things just get ripped up. So you have like holes like in the pads on the side. The thing just looks terrible.
Not very practical. Not very practical.
No,
but I do miss the I have a local commercial from Memphis from the early 80s stuck in my head, which was at Country Boy Water Beds, we just want to say, if you ain't sleeping on water, you otter.
Oh, shit.
Which I'm sure you must have had equally colorful local Kentucky commercials of similar businesses, or like the furniture store where the person would have their kids in the shot, you know, like in the commercials.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you grew up in the 80s, you grew up in a world where if you didn't have a waterbed, you were trash, especially in Kentucky, you know, because you got the woman with the tallest hair on the planet that's on your TV going, well, I sleep on a bed of water, blah, blah, blah. Isn't that the most fanciest thing you could ever think of? Meanwhile, it is, you know, basically the white trashiest, you know, piece of furniture you could ever have.
Gross water that I'm pretty sure they... You would have had to have put chemicals or something in there to keep the water from just turning.
Oh, yeah. The water inside a waterbed is usually like neon blue.
Right.
Because it's got so much stuff in it to keep it from, you know, getting too gross. You'd have to drain it from time to time. There was like a attachment for a water hose that you would attach to the little cap. And you would have to like push the water out of the thing, and it'd go through the water hose and out into your yard. And then you'd refill it like every now and then. Just the stupidest invention ever. I talk about waterbeds all day, Chris, but I kind of feel like we've lost everyone.
No, not at all. Are you kidding? We've talked about cartoon robots. We've talked about whipped cream mattresses, which I think is the next trend, by the way. I think people are ready for whipped cream mattresses. And if it's too firm, there's just a little valve and you can just suck some of it out and then just kind of like soften the mattress a little bit. These are good ideas.
I feel like
often when we get together, we come up with so many good ideas. And I think whipped cream mattresses is a really solid winner of an idea.
Let's do it.
You need to invest some of this Walking Dead money into the whipped cream mattress. Oh, do you still have a bed and breakfast? Whatever happened with that?
Oh, I don't need to talk about the bed and breakfast.
No, my
No, my wife has a bed and breakfast in Kentucky. It's called Ashford Acres Inn. If anyone is looking for a place to stay in Cynthiana, Kentucky, it is a wonderful establishment that is run by my sister-in-law Anastasia, and it's a great little place for you to stay if you want to stay in a bed and breakfast
in Cynthiana, Kentucky.
In Cynthiana, Kentucky. Yeah, it's beautiful. And Cynthiana's a fantastic town. And they got a lot of Walking Dead memorabilia. And, you know, like there's a big Walking Dead mural. And you can see some of the places from the Walking Dead comics, because the first issue of Walking Dead took place in Cynthiana, Kentucky. So it's not a bad place to visit.
I know that, I mean, obviously The Walking Dead has a wide berth of the universe has a wide berth of storytelling going on at the moment. It is. I mean, I always thought like, well, someday, you know, the show's gonna wrap up. I really kind of thought like, oh, is this gonna be like one of those CSI type shows that goes for like 20 years? And ending, and I know it's still like almost 2 years away. It hasn't really sunk in with me yet. I think because I've kicked it down the field emotionally, like, well, that's still like way down, you know. And it's not just, I mean, like, yes, I will miss doing Talking Dead 2, but I will miss the show. Like it does feel.
You think you're going to stop doing Talking Dead after season 11?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, that we haven't had those conversations, so I have no idea. But you know, like, even just so many things have changed since the show started, you know, like it, number one, the way television shows are made, the type of, like, all these platforms erupted and started creating content. Like, when The Walking Dead started, it was such a unique animal because, number one, you know, shooting a zombie show with those kinds of special effects, you know, in HD, like, it was just never done before. Like I said, you know, killing off major characters. There was so much about the show that was so different. And then in the years, you know, like after a few years of it being on the air, all these platforms emerged, and that kind of like genre-based television show, it sort of proliferated, you know, like, but even the way that people watch television has changed in the last 10 years. So it really has kind of straddled these two different eras of media. And it's just, it is kind of surreal to me. Like, I just still haven't really fully processed it.
I think about it a lot because, you know, Walking Dead was fortunate to arrive at a time when you could be an extremely noisy TV show that gets a lot of notice and gets people talking about it. And it's really, really way more difficult to do that now with all of the various different platforms and people producing, you know, what is it, like 10,000 shows a year now? You know, I think that even if you just look at, you know, 2009 when The Walking Dead debuted versus 2021, just the number of television shows that are in production is exponentially higher just because all of these big streaming platforms are trying to do, you know, all kinds of stuff. And so it's kind of harder to stand out, you know, so as a person who's, you know, looking to create TV shows and do more things like that, it's interesting to see just how different the landscape is, you know, pre-Walking Dead and eventually post-Walking Dead, if there ever is truly a post-Walking Dead. I mean, I know we're ending with our season 11, but I think they said that, you know, AMC announces, you know, it's ending on season 11 and we're also doing these five other shows. Walking Dead will live on in some form. But it's definitely been a wild ride to see the, you know, just the changing landscape of television and get to, you know, watch how it's all unfolded.
I mean, binge watching wasn't, I mean, obviously you could get a DVD set of something and binge watch it, but the concept of binge watching current shows was not a thing in 2010, you know, it's so strange to me, how, and I have no idea what, you know, I keep saying like the pandemic really hastened this shift in programming and broadcasting that was already underway, but it really made it kind of happen faster with like the breaking apart of companies and the reforming and streaming services, like really kind of rushing like, oh, well, everyone's home. We got to start getting these things in place so we can, you know, everyone. And so it creating shows now, does the idea that people will probably binge watch them, does that affect the creative process in any way, you know, or is it different than the sort of like traditional linear broadcasting or even comics, like, well, issue to issue, week to week, people will just have to wait until is the storytelling affected by the idea that these things will probably be binge watched?
I think that, you know, I mean, not really for me. I think that if you make your show, your show has to be, in a sense, your show can be less interesting if it's being binge watched. If you're watching from week to week, you have to give more to the audience to make them hold on for that gap, you know, between weeks and between seasons. If you're binge watching, I feel like it's a lot easier to get somebody to watch a show a minute later than it is to, you know, get somebody to come back a week later. So I don't know that there's necessarily a need, to change your storytelling to accommodate binge watching. I think that it can heighten the experience. I watched Breaking Bad as it came out, and I enjoyed that show immensely. I'm recently rewatching it with my soon-to-be 15-year-old son, and I'm like, oh wait, that character from season 4 appears in 1 episode of season 1. I didn't realize that. And oh yeah, that they actually showed him working at the. I had forgotten that they'd actually showed him working at the car wash that he eventually buys. Like when she was like, yeah, you worked at this car wash, we're going to buy it. I was like, oh yeah, did he work at a car wash? I don't remember. Cause it's like, you've watched those episodes years previous, right, when you're seeing season 3, season 4. And so it provides like a much more, maybe just for morons like me, but it provides like a much richer experience because you're consuming it all together. And so you see all the little nuances and, little tricks and things a little, closer than you would otherwise. All that said, I am somewhat against binge watching, as a person, just because I love being forced to digest and contemplate what it is that I have experienced. I think that, one of my favorite shows going on right now is The Mandalorian by far. And, I just love the sense of community that it's brought back to television watching, where like a show like Stranger Things, you're like, you and I are talking and, we both like Stranger Things and we get on the phone and we're like, oh my God, the new season of Stranger Things, right? Like, isn't it great? And then you're like, oh, I'm only on episode 4. And I'm like, oh, I'm on episode 5. And that is the end of the conversation. Like, we don't talk about it. You're here. I'm here. We're both enjoying it. Great. But on a thing like Mandalorian, oh my God, did you just watch the Krayt Dragon? It's crazy. Yeah, oh my God, I can't wait till next week. Like, everybody's on the same place. Everybody is like forced to have that gap between episodes. And, it brings back that sense of community that you had, back in the early days of Walking Dead and the television of that we grew up with, where you go to school and talk about X-Files and things like that. It's really cool. And I think there's a happy medium that, comes from, the way that Mandalorian has had success that Amazon is doing. I think the way that they launched The Boys, where they're giving you these 3 episodes. And yes, so you get to binge the first 3 episodes and get hooked on the season. And then from that point on, it moves into that weekly model. They could easily put all those episodes out on the same day, but then
I'm so glad they did too.
One day where you consume it and then it's over. But by doing the 3 episodes and then the other episodes, like, you get that Mandalorian effect of like, oh my gosh, Huey did this and Butcher doing this. And did you see what Homelander did? And I'm very excited just to bring this to a place where I can try and shill something that we're doing that launch with Invincible as well on Amazon.
Well, and I think you're right, by the way, because I do think some shows are like fast food where you just kind of want to consume it all at once and then not think about it again. And some shows are these kind of sumptuous feasts that you wouldn't want to eat every day, but every so often it just is really satisfying and it really sits with you. And you're right. And I think, Walking Dead might've been a much different experience if it had just all come out at once 10 years ago. And then every season it all came out at once. Cause you're right. I think the experience of being able to really process and talk and theorize, like, that really forms community and that keeps the conversation going. And it's the thing that powered Talking Dead, but also especially with The Boys, I loved the ritual experience of every week when there was a new episode, my wife and I would go, oh my God, there's a new episode of The Boys. Holy shit. Let's watch, it's coming out. Let's watch it.
And finally, so it's Friday. There's something to live for.
Well, kind of in a way, yeah. And so that experience is should not be minimized, but that's not for every show. Like, shows that have a lot of stuff going on and a lot of characters and like dense plot lines and crazy, like shows that are shocking in great ways need those times to digest, like The Boys or Walking Dead or Breaking Bad or whatever, but not every show necessarily has that. So I do think it's a case by case basis. Cause when Talking Dead first started to get,
so you think we should binge watch bad shows is what you're saying?
I think there are some shows that are just that are more appropriate to binge watch. Cause you can just kind of tear through them and they make sense as a whole. They're just like it's just kind of like watching a long movie, you know, like, oh, I got it all at once, you know. But I do like the idea of binge watching as a supplemental viewing experience, like your experience with Breaking Bad, where you now you've experienced a show, you can go back, go, oh shit, here's all these Easter eggs or all these things that connect that I never really realized before. And I'm really glad to hear that you're doing that with Invincible, because it's gonna, I think it's gonna, you know, because Invincible has those moments that I think people are gonna, they're gonna talk about, you know, week to week, and it's gonna keep people coming back.
It's got those, what are they called? Transformers the movie moments, where you're like, oh my God, I didn't expect this to happen.
did you ever expect, I feel like early on when I would have conversations with you, when The Walking Dead first started, you were like, yeah, but you know, Invincible, I don't know if that's something that'll ever get to get made. I just don't know if that's, I'm just not sure that's a thing.
Listen, can you not reveal to the public how negative I am privately?
They know.
I'm trying to look like a positive human being who is happy about things and is cheerful.
No, and
I just,
that.
You know, no, don't reveal. Come on. I can be labeled somewhat of a pessimist at times.
Well, I think, you know, yes, some of that's pessimism, but some of it's also like tempering expectations, and also just sort of being realistic that the landscape of programming has changed so much since, you know, 10 or 11 years ago that, yes, you know, like a network probably, you know, content-wise, maybe wouldn't have been able to do like Invincible. Like it was crazy that Walking Dead even got made on television, and that really, you know, like evolved the types of shows that are made. And you know, television is a business, and so when networks see like, oh, The Walking Dead, which is a show that we might have been afraid to do before because it's so violent and it's so intense, but now that's doing really well, maybe we should, you know, like they follow the money. So
I will say, more than all that, the you know, like back in, you know, 2009 or so, when we were probably talking, you know, there hadn't been this superhero landscape that is, I think, necessary for Invincible to really thrive. Invincible debuted in 2003 as a comic at a time when the comic book audience had been reading superhero stories, you know, for a lot of people their entire lives. You know, there's, you know, almost 100 years of superhero tropes and things to play upon. And Invincible really is, I think, the most appealing to someone who is very well versed in superhero storytelling. And they know that, you know, villains do this and heroes do this, and this is how the world works, and this is how secret identities work, and this is, you know, how like different, you know, like layers and different, you know, like tropes that you have in superhero stories, because Invincible, you know, mainly it subverts those things, and it plays upon your expectations and, you know, lulls you into thinking you know what a story is going to be, and then kind of, you know, shifts the ground out from under you. And so you really need an audience that is well-versed in superhero storytelling to really get as much out of Invincible as you can. And now that we're moving into 2021, that audience is literally almost everyone on the planet, thanks to the MCU, thanks to Warner Brothers, thanks to all these CW shows, you know, the various DC animated films. Like, the superheroes are literally absolutely everywhere. And so I think that it's just the perfect time. I mean, The Boys is another really good example of a show that, you know, kind of does what we're talking about. You know, the Homelander character, you know, because he, you know, you identify him as a Superman-like character, has more weight to it, because when he does the things that he does, your brain is like, this shouldn't be happening. That's right. Not the way this character should be behaving. And that's intriguing and makes the story a little deeper for you. Invincible does, you know, a lot of that.
And it almost couldn't. And the same with the Deadpool movies, like that you needed like 30 years of superhero movie tropes for it to then comment on that. And that is, in like Invincible, that's what's so great about the dialogue with the audience and with fandom, because there is that, you're kind of peeking your head above what's been done and going, hey, everyone, sort of like with the Scream series, like, hey, everyone.
Yes.
You're fans.
A really great example.
You're fans of this genre. You're fans of this type of a thing. And, but we know how it normally goes. And so we're just going to kind of make fun of stuff, fuck with other things, flip things upside down, because we're all, And that's when you have like community creators, like people who are in the community, in the demographic, who are creating the content for that community and that demographic. And that's, I think, what helps it ring true. But in the old media days, that would have been considered too niche or too, like, you know, because media didn't think that way. They just always thought lowest common denominator, biggest, widest audience possible. And now, because you have, you know, streamers like Amazon who are able to say, like, hey, we understand that niche just means hyper-targeted, focused audience, which also can bleed into the mainstream as well. And we know how to reach that audience, and we have algorithms that can reach that audience. It is kind of a wonderland for the kind of fan-driven niche content creators, because it just kind of, you're able to cut through all the noise and just, and like really reach into the heart of your audience in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're moving into a real renaissance for, you know, genre fans and genre storytelling, just because the way these streaming platforms work is it's not like traditional media where you have to have this giant audience. They're looking for subscriber bases, and, you know, Netflix and Amazon and all these places, their subscriber base can be pieced together from 1,000 different niche audiences. So as long as those people are subscribers and they're all subscribing together, you can provide much more unique and much more different, much more targeted entertainment, which is, you know, going to lead to some really cool choices and some really awesome stuff moving forward.
And also, as a creator, they know it's, I feel like the streamers don't necessarily do what networks would have done in the past, which is go, okay, well, we have this property and we want to make a thing out of it, but it's for television. So we got to kind of like tone it. We got to spin it a little bit for our audience, where I feel like the streamers just go, look, Robert Kirkman, you obviously made this successful comic. You know how to make it. So just make it the way you think it should be done. You know, would you agree that there's more creative freedom as a creator with this type of a setup, because they know that you know your audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with Amazon, it was like, we want to turn this comic book into an animated series. And they're like, yeah, cool. And we were like, yeah, but you don't understand. Like, this is super violent. And they're like, yeah, cool. And then we're like, yeah, but, you know, like, we, you know, we're going to, you know, like keep all the violence, and it's going to be this sprawling epic that's, you know, going to be this crazy thing. And they're like, yeah, that's great. And they're like, okay, but in order to do that, it needs to be an hour long. And they were like, yeah, cool. You know, and I'm like, all right, great. Like, now we're doing this insane hour-long animated series that is, I'll say this for Invincible fans. Invincible is a violent comic. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens. But when it's all moving and it has sound and everything, it's like 1,000 times worse.
Right.
And especially I'm gonna spoil things, but when we get in there and we roll our sleeves up, we're like, okay, the comic did this. Let's see if we can plus this up. Let's see if we can make this crazier and more intense and nutty. And so what we end up with is, when the episodes come back, I'm like, oh my God, they're never gonna let us get away with this. Like, we are gonna have to tone this down. We're gonna have to cut these things. We're gonna have to clean this up. This is crazy. And then they go through clearances and people are like, thumbs up. And I'm just like, holy crap.
Well, animation like usually gets more of a pass.
Nuts.
Animation usually gets more of a pass than live action. And some pretty outrageous stuff happens on The Boys, which is live action. So I would imagine an animated show would have a little more leeway on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah, The Boys is fantastic. There are definitely times where, you know, we're like 10 times past some of the craziest things they've done on The Boys. It's going to be kind of loony.
And so this iteration of Invincible, is it exactly what you had hoped for, or always kind of what you thought it would need to be to get made?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a creator's dream come true. I mean, you know, working with Corey Walker and Ryan Ottley on the comics and bringing that together, like, we had that environment because of Image Comics to, you know, push the envelope and do whatever we wanted and, you know, no holds barred comics. And so that's been established. And so to be able to continue that kind of mode in animation form, and to end up with a product that, you know, like crosses the lines we want to cross and provides those shocking moments that we want to provide. But really at its heart, I mean, I have to say this with Walking Dead too, like, it's not violence for violence sake. Like, the whole thing is about Invincible exploring the ramifications of these things and the drama that comes from that and the real human toll that superheroes existing in our world would have. And you can't do that unless you show them the ugly side of what this world, you know, is all about. And, you know, being able to go to those places and show those things, there's absolutely gut-wrenching moments in Invincible. And, you know, I couldn't be happier with the things we've been allowed to do. It's going to be a crazy experience.
The cast is pretty amazing, too. Steve Yeun plays Invincible. And is J.K. Simmons play Omni-Man?
Yeah, J.K. Simmons is Omni-Man. Sandra Oh is Debbie. We got Gillian Jacobs as Adam Eve. We got Walton Goggins as Cecil Stedman. We got Clancy Brown. We got Mark Hamill. We got Zazie Beetz. We got Mahershala Ali. Like, I'm just Andrew Reynolds. Like, there's a lot of names I'm not saying. I'm not gonna try to list everybody because I'll forget people. We got a ton of the Walking Dead cast coming in to play the Guardians of the Globe.
Oh, that's fantastic! I think I saw Lauren Cohan's name on the list.
Yeah, Lauren Cohan. We got Sonequa Martin-Green. We got Chad Coleman.
Oh my God, that's fantastic!
We got Michael Cudlitz. Like, we got Lenny James. It's going to be great.
It must be nice to be able to go back to the Walking Dead cast. Listen, I'm sorry your character died on that show, but here's this other show that you could do a thing on.
Possible that in the case of some of these actors, we are killing them again.
Kirkman!
which is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Hey, you want to come die again?
In an animated way, though. Like, listen, like, you know, cool. Like with what people go through with prosthetics and special effects and stuff, you know, on The Walking Dead, like the physical exotic, like just being able to go into a sound booth or even just in some cases, probably their own homes with like a microphone. I'm sure that's not a big ask.
No. Yeah. It's a lot easier to get people to do voice recording than it is to, you know, have to get them to, you know, go to a place at a certain time where they can all be together. Like it's definitely a lot harder.
Do you make a vocal appearance in Invincible anywhere?
I absolutely do not.
Oh, come on.
Oh, I don't know. It's still a pet peeve of mine. Like, I don't like it when people cameo in their own things. It always pulls me out of the, you know, like you're watching Lord of the Rings and you're like, oh, geez, there's Peter Jackson. It's okay. It's your movie. Like, why do I have to look at you now? Like, come on.
You know,
I don't know. I guess I have no fun in me is what I'm saying. I don't know.
That's interesting to hear you say that because of, and I feel like I'll regret if I never do it. I'm already starting to regret it, but early on in the run of Walking Dead, Nicotero would always say, hey man, come down, man. We'll make you a zombie. We'll put you in a, and two things always kind of stopped me from doing it. Number one, I went through zombie makeup first season of Talking Dead and it was pretty intense. And secondly, I always thought, yeah, but if people see me and they recognize me, it's going to take them out of the show. I don't want to be the thing that people are like, fuck you, man. You know, like your stupid face, like ruined Walking Dead, you know? And so I was always hesitant for the exact same reason, even though they probably would have made me up to be unrecognizable. But now,
yeah, I mean, Greg Nicotero himself has played, I don't know, 1,000 different key zombies that you would recognize.
But he's the artist behind the zombies, so it makes sense.
No, but what I'm saying is you don't know it's him. Like, he's right. It's not like there's the same zombie showing up constantly. Like, they do the makeup in a way that you can't tell. But no, you should definitely be a zombie. I don't do it because it seems painful.
Yeah, the you know, listen, for anyone who hasn't gone through the goal, is it hard to get makeup on? It's like, well, you sit there for a while. Like, there's a bunch of shit glued to your face. The contacts are pretty intense. You can't really move. You can't really, you know, breathe. Like, the actors, like the extras who go, I mean, I don't even want to say, like, extras not, I wouldn't even, like, the featured zombies, like the zombies on the show, the amount of work that they go through to bring those things to life with all of the makeup and all the shit. And in some cases, like, you know, have special ventilation so that their body can breathe. And they still have to convincingly be animated dead people. It's pretty fucking epic.
It's like, if you think it's easy to be a zombie on The Walking Dead, I want you to encase yourself in trash bags Make sure that you are completely sealed inside, and then poke a hole in it with a straw for you to breathe in, and then go stand in the sun for, 6 hours.
And then have to still move around and convincingly perform a task.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's difficult work.
Do you have any plans for, have you kind of dealt with it yet with the show? I mean, even though, like, again, there are other Walking Dead properties, there's still, but
yeah,
but this is like, you know, it was the first one. I mean, it changed your life, you know, like you,
yes,
you know, I think about how much it's changed my life, and I'm just like the weird cousin of the show, you know, like it's going to be hard for me to say goodbye to it.
A scrappy do of Walking Dead.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly. Oh, not Scrappy Doo. No, I'm Puppy Power.
No, I'm kidding. Come on. But I guess I'm not really thinking about it, to be honest. You know, Angela's hard at work on our massive season 11. It's going to be our biggest season ever. And there's, you know, there's a long road ahead to get all of that done. And so I guess I'm more focused on that and not focused on the fact that, you know, when that's done, you know, everything will be different. The world will be different. There won't be a core Walking Dead show. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, you got me thinking about it now, and I'm starting to get short of breath. But no, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I ended the comic. Can it be worse than that for me? Probably not. I mean, that was pretty emotional. So I don't know. I mean,
do you ever think back about that and go, I could have just gone for a little bit longer? Or do you feel like, you know, that's the story ended the way it needed to end, and I'm peaceful with that?
Yeah, it's that second one, really. I mean, I think that I'm so insecure as a writer, if I have to be completely honest. I'm like, if I worked on that for even one more month, I know I would have fucked it up, you know? Like, I feel like I just like skated by on the skin of my teeth to get to an ending that people seem to be satisfied with. And yes, internet, I know there's some people that aren't satisfied with it. But you know, the ending did seem, you know, very well received. And so I feel like if I, you know, like I say, if I were to work one more minute on that, I would have ruined it all. So no, I got it exactly at the right time.
And, you know, we would talk about this sometimes when you would come on Talking Dead, and we would talk about the episode that would just air. And then in the commercial breaks, you'd go, man, you know, my brain is so far into next season because we're already in production. We're already, you know, there's this constant forward momentum where you as a creator are generally like a year ahead of what anyone is seeing, at least, you know? So yeah. Your that forward momentum has probably spared you a lot of the things that maybe you've already kind of mourned because you lived through it like a year before anyone had seen it.
Yeah, I always found Walking Dead to be, or Talking Dead, being on Talking Dead to be like the most nerve-wracking, uncomfortable experience possible, just because, you know, I'm always worried I'm going to spoil something. I'm always worried that I'm, you know, going to say the wrong thing. And there would be like the cuts that you're reviewing and the episodes that you're writing and the things that are airing. So there's kind of like three Walking Dead shows that exist at one point. And then when I was writing the comic, there's like this fourth Walking Dead thing. And so it's almost like keeping four different universes like together in your head. And you also are on live television, and you have to not look like a moron, or at least that's a hope. I don't know that I accomplished that. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if people have even noticed, but I haven't been on Talking Dead in a while because, you know, it is so nerve wracking. The last few times I was on Talking Dead, there were a couple of things I saw on Twitter where it was like, find someone who looks into the camera the way Robert Kirkman looks into the camera on Talking Dead, because I noticed that there's a prompter that has, can I reveal a little bit about Talking Dead?
Yeah, totally.
There's a prompter that has your next questions like on the bottom of one of the main cameras. And I'm so nervous about like, okay, what's going to happen next? Like, what am I going to talk about? That I would be like, oh shit, I can totally see Chris's questions before he asks them. And so I can like work on my answer a little bit before. And so I was watching that camera as it would like move around and get shots, like reading the question. Okay. I got a good answer for that. I know what to say there. That's cool. I'm not going to spoil anything. Cause that was that one episode that the, okay. Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes I would rewatch episodes before Talking Dead and sometimes I wouldn't have time to, but eventually I was just like, this is too much work. It's too much work.
I mean, it is. You're right. Because it's specifically one of the two main reasons why I never watch the show ahead, because I don't want that pressure. I don't want to know, you know, like I found out about Lori's death in, you know, that season three, I think it was episode four, season three, maybe.
You're asking me? No, yes, I think that's right.
And because I was visiting the set, and I saw Sarah come around the corner just like covered in blood in a way that was like, oh, you didn't survive whatever happened to you on the show. And I had to sit with that all summer long and had to go to Comic-Con, and she was on the panel. It's like, so what are you excited about for Lori this year? You know, like, and it was so hard to keep it in, and I was terrified I was going to spoil something. And I also felt like I had to lie to people in order to pull it off. And I didn't like that. I didn't like that position. And so
welcome to my life.
But for you, it's like, oh, I'm going to say something. Did I accidentally just say something that happens in the comic or that happens on a few drip? Was it this episode? Was it this show? Was it that? And so I can understand the pressure of that, but also like, you're in the sort of uniquely maybe coveted, but also like not coveted position. It's almost kind of a George Lucas thing where it's like, you created this thing, but you don't really own it anymore. Like emotionally, you don't really own it. It's owned by the fans, and you know, fan opinions are valid. And it's whatever you think about the show is somewhat relevant, but also not entirely relevant at the same time, because people will have their own interpretations and their own ideas. And that's all okay, because as fans, they're entitled to whatever their opinion is. But it is interesting that you've created this thing. Do you feel like in a way like, oh, it's not really mine. I'm like a consultant at this point, but it really sort of belongs to the world.
I mean, I guess a little bit. I mean, it's very much still mine, Chris. How dare you?
But I mean, on paper it is.
Yeah, sure. But no, I mean, it's really moving to think about how much of a part of people's lives it is, just how many hours that the people have devoted to this. I mean, you know, I've been to many a convention. I did a Walking Dead cruise that was just populated with people that loved Walking Dead. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really amazing. And, you know, it does give you a bit of a sense of just how important you know, everything involving Walking Dead is, just because you want to constantly be, you know, making these people happy and giving them an experience that repays their dedication. So, you know, there's definitely a gravitas, I guess, that comes with it, where, you know, when I would sit down to write Walking Dead comics when I was still writing them, like you can't help but have in the back of your mind, like, yeah, I mean, I'm writing an issue of a comic and I've been doing that for 16 years. And so I know what I'm doing, but you know, like this panel might be tattooed on somebody's leg, you know, like this, this is going to appear in a TV show that's going to be watched by millions of people. You know, I wonder if this line of dialogue will get turned into a meme. You know, like will this character be worthy enough of getting an action figure? You know, like there's like dumb shit that pops into your head where you're like, why am I thinking about this? And you know, and sometimes it makes you, you know, be like, well, you know, this person will be more unique if they had goggles. So let's give them goggles. You know, and it it does influence things, to a certain extent, but yeah, I mean, it's crazy seeing what Walking Dead has become and, you know, how it has an effect on, you know, how everything is done.
Yeah. And also just sort of speaking to that, you know, I do think, look, you know, this will always be a part of my life, and I'm very, that's comforting to me that even when the show ends and, you know, whether or not we do more Talking Deads, I don't know. Of course I would, but I don't know. But it'll still always be a part of my life. The same way that when characters come on and they die off, those actors are always, it's just a part of this amazing community. And I think Walking Dead really helped to show us that in television, like, these communities are really important, because it's not just, yes, it is entertainment, but at the same time, you know, you have to remember that it's a part of people's lives. And like I was saying, you know, like my wife and I watch shows, it's a part of your ritual, and it's a part of, it's a bonding experience. It's a communal experience. It's a way that people, it's something that gets people through tough times and helps them celebrate, you know, like friendships, and, or in cases where, you know, people will say like, oh, you know, like I, this family member who's no longer with us, it was our favorite thing to do together. Like, that is so impactful and important. Yeah. And to be able to look people in the eye and hear those stories and see, you know, like, it's not just a piece of entertainment. It really is, like, we really understand now that it's, that it is a community. That is, I think, the thing that I am most comforted by, that I feel like I will always be a part of that, even when the show is done. And so that has helped a lot sort of ebb some of the like, oh man, but I mean, it is going to be I will be sad. Like, there's no way around it. I know, I'm just kicking it down the field for now. But even what we were talking about before, about how things exist so that then other things like Invincible or Deadpool are able to sort of comment on those things. My wife and I watched this fun British show called Zomboat. And it's just this silly,
I'm listening.
This silly zombie comedy where one of the main characters is this girl who is like such a hardcore, like, you know, gamer, zombie, like sci-fi horror film fan. And they make a lot of Walking Dead references, like, well, fucking Rick Grimes wouldn't have dot, 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 you know? And it's really fun because it is, again, it's in that same vein of like, you know, you can see the writers kind of having this dialogue with the fans. It's definitely a by fans for fans kind of a show. And so, I don't know, just something that you might enjoy. Really, really fun and silly. It's a British show called Zomboat.
Well, you had me until you said it was a British show.
All right, take it easy now.
That's just a podcast joke. Don't get mad at me, guys.
That's just... So what have you been we're almost at an hour now. I realize that you and I have not caught up in a really long time. I think maybe we chatted or texted, you know, once or twice, and because I miss those times where it'd be like, fuck, we haven't hung out in a while, let's go have dinner. And now that, like, going out to dinner, I mean, I know people can go dine outside, but we're just emotionally not there yet.
Yeah, I ain't taking no risks.
But I miss our
taking a risk for a pork chop.
I miss our dinners, man. I miss.
No, I do too, man. I do too. It's so weird, like, with the quarantine and the pandemic and everything. Like, you know, you don't call people on the phone. You know, like, that used to be a thing, but like, I have friends like you in Los Angeles where it's like you the way we converse is we text and then we get together. Yeah, hey, let's get together. Let's get together and talk. It's like, well, you have a device in your hand where you could just make a phone call and have the same conversation you would have over dinner.
Nah, doesn't count.
But you don't. And so I feel terrible because, you know, there's you, there's dozens of other people that I just haven't really talked to or seen or, you know, conversed with much at all during the pandemic. So it's funny, like getting to do this podcast, I was like, am I going to sound like a human being? Like, can I sound like a human for an hour? Because I haven't done this in a while. I haven't done very many interviews. I mean, I'm doing more as we ramp up, you know, for the launch of Invincible, but I'm like, you know, I don't really go out. I don't really talk to people. Like, I haven't been to the Skybound office. Like, we have Zoom meetings from time to time, but, even those, I feel like I'm an awkward weirdo now. Like, and maybe I was always an awkward weirdo and now I'm just aware of it. But it's just, you know, like, I feel like I'm rusty with my sound making from my voice thing.
It's so easy to become an isolated hermit, especially when the world is like, stay home and be isolated. And then you start going, oh, I guess I didn't really need to go out to get food. I guess I didn't really need, but I have a lot of clothes I don't wear. I don't really need all of these. I don't need. And then, so you just start kind of like retreating. And I think there's a steep slide into like just hermitism where you just don't, you're like, I don't need to go. I don't need to, you know, like, I don't need to do anything. I don't need to go out ever again. But because it's, you know, like, we are in a time where we are able to have thanks to Amazon, coincidentally, and other like food delivery services, we really don't have to leave. And
I mean, those of us who are fortunate enough to have jobs that we can do at home, you know, like that's really, you know, you got to acknowledge that.
Absolutely.
You know, we are very lucky to be able to, you know, sit at home and have a driver bring us everything that we could possibly want from Amazon. But yeah, it's crazy. Like, let me ask you this, Chris, if you were to, so February of 2020, I would have said, there are so many television shows that I want to see. I don't know if I will ever have time to watch them all. Okay. But at what month did you run out of shows in the pandemic? Because for me, I think it was like October. I was like, wait a minute, there's nothing to watch.
You know what? We did not have that problem because there are two channels that is in our, well, first three things. Number one,
plug them.
Pretty much every horror movie that comes out, we watch.
Yeah.
So there's always a constant stream of horror to watch. And then when you kind of live in the balance between HGTV and Investigation Discovery, there's always a true crime thing or series or a renovation thing or series to watch. So, and there are like, you know, I mean, I don't know, there must be 1,000 episodes of like House Hunters International, you know, like there's no shortage of those types of shows that kind of fill in the gaps for the scripted things that we
tell want. Me about this House Hunters International. I need to.
Oh my God.
No, great. Please don't. Okay. I'm kidding. But,
well, you know, okay, wait, let me just a side note. Do you watch House Hunters at all?
No, I don't.
Okay. So there was regular House Hunters, which is basically like a, you know, people in the United States looking for a house and there's three houses they look at and then which one are they going to choose? And then House Hunters International has a weird twist where it's like people are always, they either want to live in another country or a job is taking them to another country. But we noticed that well into the run of the series, they started really leaning into like relationship friction in a way that sometimes is like watching your friend's parents like passive aggressively jab at each other where you feel like, should we be witnessing this? You know? And so it's so many episodes in the last handful of seasons that I feel like it's definitely something that they've leaned into where it's just like, you'll have couples and it's like, well, I want this house. Well, it's, you know, it's $1,000 more a month. Well, yeah, but I have to be here all the time. Well, maybe you should get a job while you're there. You know, like it's that kind of stuff where you're like, holy shit. And I don't really like watching television friction, but for some reason it sort of works because at the very end, they pick a place and then they always do the 3 months later. Oh, we couldn't be happier. And Lydia and I was like, really? Because I feel like this relationship was not going to last. There was already friction and you had to start a new life in another country. That might be one too many asks for.
So you're finding their Facebook pages to see if they've gotten divorced?
Seeing if it worked out.
I give it 6 months.
6 months, maybe, if they're lucky. So we haven't actually, we haven't necessarily run out of stuff in that way because there's always some, you know, there's always something to watch or some new series or something. Why? You feel like you've exhausted all of
it? Well, I mean, I clearly haven't run out of anything because there's great things like WandaVision and new shows that are coming out and stuff. But I feel like in February, it was like there was just a massive list of all these shows that I wanted to watch that I hadn't gotten around to. And, you know, I've watched them.
When does
that said, you know, if I got to be honest, I still need to get through Peaky Blinders. I haven't finished that show yet. So what I'm saying is I'm a liar.
I still got to watch The Wire. I feel like the longer I don't watch that, the harder it is for me to start it because the expectation is so, I felt so much pressure. And I know this because I have pressured people about like Breaking Bad, for instance, like, what do you mean you haven't seen Breaking Bad? It's only 5 seasons, you know, but The Wire, I feel such an intense responsibility to watch every, cause I know it's a very detail oriented show to be so immersed in it. And I also feel the pressure to love it so much that it is almost, I've almost had a little bit of an avoidance. Like I'm kind of afraid to start it in a weird way. I don't know.
You got to start watching The Wire. You're ridiculous. It's amazing. It's, you know, one of, if not the best TV show ever made. You know, don't be intimidated by it. It's not like it's like so complex that you're not going to be able to watch it. It's, you know, it's just a cool show.
I also have
great characters. It's also very funny. Like, I don't know if anyone's told you how funny it is. The show is goddamn hilarious.
No,
it's a good show. Interestingly enough, I watched I think I got the first two seasons on DVD, and then I watched the other seasons as they aired way back in the day. And there's an episode, I believe, in season three or season four that my DVR, or no, I think I didn't get home in time to watch it, and so I missed it. And so I would have had to, I feel like, like HBO would rerun things, and I just missed this episode. And I was like, do I buy the DVD season just to watch this one episode that I missed? But there is a mythical one episode of The Wire in season three or four that I missed and never got to watch. So I'm actually planning at some point to rewatch The Wire. And I'm very excited that there's an episode buried in there that that I have never seen. Because I just, like, the next week I just was like, I guess I'm just gonna watch this episode, and I followed along okay and just went through the
season.
It was
a different time when we couldn't just call things up on our phones.
But the sad thing, Chris, and I don't know if you've noticed this or if you're willing to acknowledge this, I have hit an age where I know when I finally do rewatch The Wire, I more than likely won't be aware of which episode it is that I never watched before.
So you don't even remember which episode, you don't even know the episode number.
No, I don't. But like, I'm watching Breaking Bad again with my son, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know how this goes. And then it doesn't go that way. And I'm like, shit, I totally forgot about this one subplot. This is crazy. You know, it's almost like I'm watching it for the first time. I mean, I remember a lot of the big stuff and, you know, things like that, but, there's a lot that you forget when you get old.
You know what people will not see, because this is an audio podcast, is how your head sunk down and you just looked down off screen. And when you went, as you get old.
Yeah. You get a lot of time to think about your age in the pandemic. And then
I definitely
get real sad.
That's been circling around the back of my head. Like, so how many more goes around the sun do I get here? You know, you start counting like, well, I guess if I'm lucky, I'll get 30 more Christmases. Like if I'm really lucky, you know, like, and it is kind of a weird, you just don't think about that stuff before, because you always feel like this time millionaire where like, I got all the time in the world. And then you go, well, No, I guess I don't. And I don't know. Yeah, what do I?
a little horrifying. I think it's in The Two Towers. Someone says they're talking about the soldiers they have, and they're like, some have seen too few winters, and some have seen too many. You know, to say that some of these guys are too old, some of these guys are too young. And I had never really heard that, like, vernacular, like referring to how many seasons you'll experience as like a reference to your age. And so now I'm like, okay, so I'm 42. I've got 8 summers until I'm 50. Like, and when you break it down that way, it's like 8 summers is nothing. Especially when you get to this age where a year is basically like a month.
Like a month.
I mean, you remember what a year was like when you were young? Like, holy crap, it was like forever. Now,
Felt like 10 years. Like, oh my God, it's only September. This doesn't end until like May. What the fuck, you know? But what you just said reminds me of Harry Met Sally, where Meg Ryan's like, it's like she's sobbing, she's really upset, and she's like, and I'm gonna be 40. And he goes, when? Someday in 8 years. Yeah, but it's just out there. It's just out there. It's just like that same kind of thing. It's just out there, but you know, we don't have to think about that.
We're re-releasing The Walking Dead Deluxe. We're re-releasing The Walking Dead in color, and we're releasing it as The Walking Dead Deluxe, which is a twice monthly series. You get 2 issues a month. And I'm doing this fun thing in the back of every issue where I go through my handwritten plots and I talk about like how I changed certain things or different storylines that I had planned and abandoned. And, you know, some characters could have died at this point, but didn't. And some characters died at that point, could have lived. And, you know, like different things that, and just going through the behind the scenes, because I have like a handwritten plot for every single issue. And a lot of them are very different than what ended up coming out. It's fun to like kind of dig back into it. And so, you know, like every few weeks I sit down and I go through my plots and I write a bunch of notes about different things I was thinking at the time, and it's great. But I recently did the one for issue 11, and I have like a list of, you know, Herschel's family and who's on the Herschel's farm and their ages. And Herschel was a, you know, an older gentleman who had adult children, and You know, like when I was writing that issue, I was like 23, 24. And so in my notes, I have Herschel 49. And I'm looking at it, no. And I'm just like, 49? Like, really?
Totally reasonable, by the way. Totally reasonable. A guy, you know, like a guy living on a farm in Georgia, he would have had kids at 23, 24, and they would have been 25, 26 when he was 49, you know, like, yeah. Like it's totally plausible. Oh my God.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, you know, now that I say it, I have a 15-year-old son. So when I'm 49, my son will be, what is it? 22, 23. So, yeah. You know, it's.
Okay. So just one. The look.
Sorry, I looked down again. I apologize.
It's so involuntary. Like, oh, God, what am I? So just one. Is there one thing before we wrap this up in the comics? You talk about storylines you abandon. Is there one storyline that you're like, shit, I probably should not have abandoned this one thing?
No, there hasn't been. I mean, I haven't gotten to some of the bigger stuff because later in the run there were, you know, like I had an ending planned for issue 70, I don't know, 72. So like I had an ending planned for the series and it wasn't nailed down to an issue, but it was very soon after they got to Alexandria. And I've talked about this a little bit, I think, when I finally did end the series. But when I got to that point in the comics, I was like, one, this ending sucks. It's super depressing and super dark, and it doesn't really like give you a satisfying conclusion. And two, like I'm having a great time and I can't bear the thought of not, you know, writing these characters anymore. And so, you know, and this was like months before I actually got to that point of the story. It wasn't like I was writing the last issue and was like, I can't do it. But there are things like that that I've abandoned along the way where, you know, you need to, you know, like I had to like, you know, like come up with other things to, you know, keep the thing going. And, you know, I at that point, I couldn't, you know, bear the thought of ending it.
Was it a different
ending? It was a completely different ending about, I mean, it was, the ending was basically everyone died. Like that's the short version of it.
Right.
You know, it was, I'll just tell you, I think I've talked about it before. I don't remember, but, when Rick gives, the speech, about like living in Alexandria long-term and how they can rebuild civilization and how this is, you know, where they were supposed to be. And I think, you know, this is like pre-Negan, pre-Ezekiel, like this is, you know, before a lot of that stuff, he was going to be giving that speech. And as he gave that speech, it was just going to fade to a statue of him having given that speech. So it would be like a, you know, like a marble version of Rick, like in the moment where he was giving the speech. And then you would zoom away from the statue and see that the statue's in the middle of Alexandria. And it like commemorates the time when Rick gave this, you know, monumental speech about the rebuilding of civilization. And Alexandria would be like built up, like it was way more successful. And there was all kinds of like buildings and structures and everything in Alexandria. But it had been abandoned for many years and all the windows were gone and it was a complete ruin and zombies were walking by.
So
the end was like, Rick succeeded. He finally rebuilt civilization. And then it didn't work and there's still zombies and fuck you. And so I was like, well, that's probably not the best ending.
It didn't work and fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm you know, glad it didn't end that way. Glad that it continued.
But we did keep the Rick statue thing. That is something that happens at the end of the comics for people that want that part spoiled. But yeah, so there were elements of that were kept. But I feel like what we eventually ended up with is, you know, a much more thoughtful, appropriate ending for people that had, you know, gone on this 16-year journey and actually wanted there to be some kind of meaningful resolution that, you know, gave the story some kind of value.
But I understand that, though, because especially from what I understand about how you were approaching the comic to begin with, it really was to kind of shake up how these types of stories are told, which is why you cut off it. Oh, wouldn't it be fucking crazy if you cut off the main character's hand? And, yeah, you know, like, and so from an early point of view to end the series of that way, I can understand why what I imagine your thought process was for how the comic was being done, why that seemed appropriate to you from early on. Like, oh yeah, well, it's fucked up. It's a fucked up, brutal world. No one survives the apocalypse. That's kind of the, you know, and so I understand, but I'm also glad that you were evolved enough to go, okay, well, at the point I'm at now, I feel like that we've gone past that. And I really do care about this. And I care about the community of fans. I care about the characters. I care about doing it. And so I want to give it a better, you know, so I appreciate that you let that go in favor of being able to move on with it.
It's like, as I got older and more mature, I decided to do something that, you know, like there was a little bit more optimism and hope that crept into the storytelling that I think shaped the ending in a much more satisfying way.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, when you're young, you want everything to be punk rock and break structure. But then as you start to get older, you go, you know, maybe there is something to this, verse, bridge, chorus, verse, chorus structure, you know, like maybe there is a little, maybe it's not so, you know, maybe these things work for a reason. But I'm excited for Invincible. When is it premiere?
March 26th.
March 26th. So Amazon's going to drop the first three episodes and then it'll be week to week after that.
Yeah. It's hashtag Invincible Friday, every Friday leading up to March 26th. And then we got three episodes on the 26th, and then you will get one episode a week until we get to the end of the 8-episode first season, which I believe will be around April 30th, I think is the date. You'll get three episodes to begin with and then weekly after that.
Fantastic. Is there anything else that you want to plug or anything else coming up?
Look, I got this new mattress company that's coming up. We got whipped cream mattresses. They're mattresses full of whipped cream. Creamy dreams, I believe, is what our tagline is.
God damn it. That was the perfect. Dude, you stuck the landing. That was an Olympic level riff. Creamy dreams. At Creamy Dreams Whipped Cream Beds, we just want to say, if you ain't sleeping on whipped cream, then fuck you. No, it doesn't work.
We just want to say, if you're not sleeping on Creamy, then you're going to pay. There you go.
Yeah, perfect. Robert Kirkman.
With back pain. You're going to pay with back pain.
It's not. You're not going to get the – whipped cream's great. It doesn't quite give you the lumbar support that you might need, and the whipped cream gets a little rank. Even with the chemicals, don't eat it. It's not edible. You might think you could eat it. You might think you could just squirt some on a sweet bun or something or a hot dog, but you can't. And
listen, we pumped so many chemicals in this whipped cream to keep it from going sour that it is neon blue. This is some neon blue whipped cream inside these mattresses. They're just water beds, by the way. These cream mattresses are just water beds that we've dug out of landfills and filled with whipped cream.
Just reused water beds.
That's all it is.
Now I'm going to have to look up if they still sell waterbeds. Somewhere, someone's still got a waterbed somewhere, I imagine. But I adore you, Robert Kirkman. I hope to get to see you in person at some point soon.
I'm driving to your house right now.
Please.
Oh, I'm driving to your house right now. We're going to give each other COVID with our mouths.
Thank you for the specificity of the transmission. I appreciate
that. That's how you give it.
I love you, and I hope to see you soon. And thanks for doing the podcast again.
I like you too, Chris.
I like you too, man. Let's transform and roll out.
Ooh-wee.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.